There are two verses today, one which has no purport and the other which has a purport, so I will do the one which has no purport by myself, and that includes the Sanskrit as well as the translation. This verse following it, which will be number 20, will be done by all of us. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Reading from the Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 2, Chapter 8, and this will be text 19. Let me get a little closer. Tatpanam varashankhyanam lakshanam hetu lakshanam purusharadana vidyer yogasya dhyatmikasya cha tatpanam varashankhyanam lakshanam hetu lakshanam purushara dana vihidir yogasya dyakshmikasya cha tatvanam parishankhyanam lakshanam hetu lakshanam purushara dana vidir yogasya hyatmikasya cha. Translation. Kindly explain. King Pariksit is speaking here, and he's asking Shukdeva Goswami, one of the greatest bhaktas alive at that time, and who knew so very much, and he had received the Bhagavatam from his father Vyasadeva. So, Pariksit says to him, kindly explain all about the elementary principles of creation, the number of such elementary principles, their causes, and their development, and also the process of devotional service and the method of mystic powers. We go now to the next verse. Actually, I was supposed to do the first verse just by myself, but I decided that we could do it all together. So now we go together on this one. Is it up there now? Chapter 8, text 20 up there now? Yeah? Okay. Yogeshvarayashvaryagatir Lingabhangastu yoginam Vedopaveda dharmanam Itihasa puranayo Yogeshvara Yogeshvara Aishvaraya gatir Lingabhangastu yoginam Vedopaveda dharmanam Itihasa puranayo Yogeshvaraishvarya gatir Lingabhangastu yoginam Vedopaveda dharmanam Itihasa puranayo. Please. Linga bangas. Itihasa puranayo. Linga Banga to Yoginam. Yogeshwar Aishwar Yagatya. Ladies, please. Yogeshwara Ishwarya Atiya. Anyone else? Go ahead. Synonyms. Yoga Ishvara, of the master of the mystic powers. Aishvarya, opulence. Gati, advancement. Linga, astral body. Banga, detachment. To, but. Yoginam, of the mystics. Sorry. Veda, transcendental knowledge. Upaveda, knowledge in pursuance of the Veda indirectly. Dharmanam, of the religiosities. Itihasa, history. Puranayo, the Puranas. Translation, purport by His Divine Grace, Srila Prabhupada. Pariksit is asking the question, what are the opulences of the great mystics? What is their ultimate realization? How does the perfect mystic become detached from the subtle astral body? What is the basic knowledge of the Vedic literatures, including the branches of history and the supplementary Puranas? Purport. The Yogeshwar, or the master of mystic powers, can exhibit 8 kinds of wonders of perfection by becoming smaller than the atom or lighter than a feather, getting anything and everything he desires, going anywhere and everywhere he likes, creating even a planet in the sky, etc. This is not the full extent, by the way. When we read the Chaitanya Charitamrita, we see powers which are absolutely unbelievable, which I won't get into at this time. There are many Yogeshwaras having different proficiencies in these wonderful powers, and the topmost of all of them is Lord Shiva. Lord Shiva is the greatest yogis, and he can perform such wonderful things far beyond the ordinary living beings, the devotees of the Lord, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, do not directly practice the process of mystic powers. But by the grace of the Lord, his devotee can defeat even a great Yogeshwar like Durvasa Muni, who picked a quarrel with Maharaj Ambarish and wanted to show the wonderful achievements of his mystic powers. Maharaj Ambarish was a pure devotee of the Lord. And we'll get into this in a little while. He was a pure devotee of the Lord, and thus without any effort on his part, repeat, and thus without any effort on his part, the Lord... What is that? Did I skip a line? And thus, without any effort on his part, the Lord saved him from the wrath of Yogeshvar Durvasa Muni. And the latter was obliged to beg pardon from the king. So the yogi thought he was much higher, bigger, better, greater, and that the king was just another king. And he was to encounter a very opposite effect, as we will get on. Similarly, at the time of Draupadi's precarious position, when she was attacked by the Kurus, she was dragged to an assembly hall where all of the great generals were sitting, and there was an assembly going on with, as I said, many of the important administrators. And Duryodhana and company, who had only degraded ideas, degraded feelings, wanted to embarrass her by disrobing her in public. Of course, she was a very beautiful woman. And she had, in effect, earlier insulted him by rejecting him. So he told his brother, Dushasan, to go and get her in the little room she was staying in and go bring her out. So he tried to bring her out, but she resisted. She said, what is this? He said, you'll find out. And he just grabbed her by the cloth and dragged her out. It was a horrible situation, especially in days of chastity. And this is a princess, not somebody ordinary woman off the street or prostitute. She was a princess, and a very great princess, very well-known princess, and was the wife of five great warriors: Yudhishthir, Bhima, Arjun, Nakul, Sahadev. And that's a whole story in itself, which I won't go into, and there was nothing immoral about it, as Vyasadeva himself stated when someone called it an immoral arrangement. It was not more immoral. In fact, it was already arranged long before she was even born. Which, as I said, it's a story in itself. Maharaj Ambarish, I think I read this before, but I'll do it again. Maharaj Ambarish was a pure devotee of the Lord, and thus without any effort on his part, the Lord saved him from the wrath of Yogeshvar Durvasa Muni. So what is a pure devotee? A pure devotee is one who has no material desires. He has no desire for any drinking, intoxication, meat eating, or any kind. He has no attachment to this material world. He even eats simply as a duty, which he has to do to maintain the body's life. But he's not attached. Meaning, if he is not attached, it means he couldn't care less if he didn't even eat. That's the kind of detachment that he had. He knows the body is going to die one day, so what difference? Today, tomorrow, right now? Let Krishna do what he wants with my body. It doesn't belong to me anyway, it belongs to him. So, similarly, at the time of Draupadi's precarious position, when she was attacked by the Kurus, who wanted to see her naked in the open assembly of the royal order, the Lord saved her from being stripped by supplying an unlimited length of sari to cover her. Now that's also very interesting, because she didn't just stay there and watch Dushasan pull the cloth off her body, not at all. She prayed. She said, my five husbands can't even help me now because they are prisoners of Duryodhana. But you, Lord, you, Krishna, can save me because you're so powerful, so praiseworthy, so lovable, and so I can depend upon you. So please save me, save my my righteousness. Save my, save me from this embarrassing, unrighteous situation, which had never even been done by in front of all these administrators, in front of kings, and in front of many great warriors. This should never be done, but it's being done. So please help me. So he did, and we often see that very beautiful picture of Krishna, kind of up in the on the ceiling, so to speak. And as Dushasan is pulling her sari off, the sari keeps getting longer and longer and longer. After about an hour or two, it doesn't say how long, but what happens is that there's no end to the cloth. And there is an end to his strength. He's completely spent. He has no energy. He's empty. As they say, he's running on empty, which means nothing. So he just threw down whatever cloth was there and walked away. And this is the greatness of devotional service. When one is, she was not an ordinary devotee. Nobody thinks she just cried, "Oh, Krishna, help me." You know, it wasn't anything like that. It was from the core of her heart. She called to him. "I value my body as belonging to my husbands and to you. And I don't want this to be this horrible situation that I should be shown to men mocking or ridiculing or admiring or any of that kind of thing. That's not my life. I'm not a prostitute." So she's praying in that deep, helpless, eager, crying out. And Krishna comes through. And we see that, as I said, that picture where Krishna is smiling. And everybody is amazed that Dushasan, who's a big-time warrior, he's like the Arnold Schwarzenegger bodybuilder. So what happened was that he couldn't succeed. He was a failure because Krishna, if he doesn't want his devotee to be disturbed or upset or shaken or crushed, he helps him. He enables him to go on. In other words, he protects him. And that's what we all will get if we have that mentality that Draupadi had and also King Ambarish had. And I'll tell a little more about that story in a few moments. Draupadi knew nothing of mystic powers, and yet she could defeat this big-time warrior. Therefore, the devotees are also Yogeshvaras by the unlimited power of the Lord, just as a child is powerful by the strength of the parents. Little child, 5-4 years old, he doesn't have any power, he doesn't have any strength, but he walks sometimes very proud in the street, says curse words sometimes, throws things at people. He's got his father on the side. He feels big, tough guy. So it's true, I used to do that myself, but my father told me, "Don't do that. I might not be able to beat up the guy who comes for you." So, therefore, the devotees are also Yogeshvaras by the unlimited power of the Lord, just as a child, I said that. They do not try to protect themselves by any artificial means, but are saved by what? By the mercy of the parents. And our parent, our real parent, our true parent, our eternal parent, Radha Krishna. Okay? Those are our parents, and those are the two whom we depend upon. We rely on. We beg to. "Please help me. I don't have the strength to deal with this. Or if I have it, I don't have very much strength and I need your help. So please be merciful. Without your grace, I can't do it." So a devotee cries like that. The Lord comes swiftly, comes very quick. He doesn't want his devotee to suffer. Even Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, when Haridas Thakur was being whipped in 22 different marketplaces, being really getting it, bareback. But what was happening secretly, which many people didn't know, and this is mentioned in the Chaitanya Charitamrita, the Haridas Thakur, "You didn't feel any pain, did you?" And he said, "No." "You know why?" "Because I was taking the pain." And he showed his back, and he had little stripes, from a whip that was going. He took the pain because he loves his devotee and he would rather take the pain rather than his devotee getting it and being hurt and being incapacitated. This is the love of Krishna. This is why Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu is called the most merciful incarnation of God. Namo Mahabhadanyaya Krishna Prema Pradayate Krishnaya Krishna Chaitanya Namale Gaudita Vijay Namaha. I offer my respectful obeisances unto the Supreme Lord Sri Krishna Chaitanya, who is more magnanimous than any other incarnation of God, even Krishna himself, because he is bestowing what no one else has ever given. And what is that? Pure love of God. We're very fortunate. We're in his line. He's giving us his blessings. He's giving us his grace. He's giving us his affection. And when we get it, we should just share it. Give it out to this devotee, that devotee, in the form of speaking, in the form of preparing prasadam, in the form of giving a book, in the form of sharing an idea or a concept or something beautiful that we saw and we want to share it. Sharing is a part, a very great part of the process of bhakti yoga. And it unites us. Even if there's some difficulties or some problems or some anger, some hatred, devotees become united in that oneness of sharing one thing with another. And all the anger, all the hatred, all the jealousy, all the disappears. I've had that happen so many times, and I'm sure so many of you have had that. We were angry, and it was gone. So, getting back. Maharaj Parikshit inquired from the learned Brahmin, Shukdeva Goswami, about the ultimate destination of such great mystics, or how they attain such extraordinary powers by their own efforts or by the grace of the Lord. Actually, it's by both. The devotee makes an effort, as I said. He prays. That's an effort. The Lord hears it. And the devotee prays harder if he doesn't get the boon that he wants and what he needs to carry on his activity. He inquired also about their detachment from the subtle and gross material bodies. He inquired also about the purports of the Vedic knowledge. As stated in the Bhagavad Gita 15:15, the whole purport of all the Vedas is to know the Supreme Personality of Godhead and thus become a transcendental, loving servant of the Lord. Would someone like to give the English translation of 15:15 so we know what Prabhupada's talking about? Yes, go ahead. A little louder, Prabhu. Yeah, wonderful. Since those listening from their computer may not have heard you, I'll just repeat it if I may. I am seated in everyone's heart, and from me come remembrance, knowledge, and forgetfulness. By all the Vedas I am to be known. Indeed, I'm the compiler of Vedanta and the knower of the Vedas. Is that okay? Okay, thank you. So, this is all very important. Now, Srila Prabhupada makes a very wonderful point, is that we are all yogeshvars. We all have powers, but they're not ours. They're not direct. They're coming from Krishna, who is very sympathetic, very affectionate, very loving to his devotees. And when he sees his devotee, especially if he's a pure devotee, even the non-pure devotee he helps, but especially the pure devotees. Look at all the help Srila Prabhupada got from Krishna in so many circumstances, so many difficulties, physical circumstances, environmental circumstances, building circumstances. This is Krishna loving his devotee. And what we can do is try to emulate, not imitate Prabhupada. None of us can be Prabhupada, at least certainly not now. Try to be dependent upon Krishna. Krishna says in all activity, excuse me, Krishna says in all activities, just depend upon me and work always under my protection. In such devotional service, be fully conscious of me. If you become conscious of me, you will pass over all the obstacles of conditioned life by my what?
Grace.
Yes, beautiful. I'm so glad everybody knows that verse. It's such an important one. It molds our daily activities. So, we will be protected by the grace of Krishna. And all activities just depend upon me and work always under my protection. In such devotional service, be fully conscious of me. If you become conscious of me, you will pass over all the obstacles of conditioned life by my grace. If, however, you do not work in such consciousness, but act through false ego, me, 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 I, mine, mine, mine. If you work through false ego, you will be what?
Lost,
exactly. And that's the whole world. They're all lost. They're lost because they want to depend only on their own efforts and not on God's. God is okay for, you know, up in the sky and on Sunday. But otherwise, why depend on God? He has nothing to do with this world. He's apart from it. He's busy creating new worlds. That's how they think. Foolish. God is everywhere in all activity. We have so many verses. I can remember. There's like three verses pop into my head on indicating how the Lord is in everyone, is everywhere, and never defeated, always invulnerable, like that. So Krishna is all-powerful. He's all-knowing. He's all-loving. He's all-kind. He's all-sweet. He's all-eager to assist and help his devotee improve, become better, become greater, as long as the devotee is not becoming falsely proud. Because if you become falsely proud, it goes to the opposite of spiritual life. Opposite meaning, I'm big, I'm great, I'm wonderful, look at me, applaud me, and like that. Then that's not spiritual life. It has nothing to do. It's worldly life. I'm better than you, and I'm better than you, and I'm bigger than you, and I'm greater than you. This is worldly life, and that's what everybody's doing, trying to be bigger and better and greater and higher and more majestic. Huh? Something else I missed up? Okay. So that's the point. The point of the devotee is always to think of himself as lower, small, like an insect, or even smaller than that, even invisibly small. Why? Why? Because that's what we are next to Krishna. I don't compare myself to you or to you or to you or to you. Why should I? You're a human being. You may be better than me today. I may be better than you tomorrow. It's meaningless. It's worthless. It has no value. But next to Krishna, our position is eternal, tiny, insignificant, worthless, useless. Oh, my Lord, I depend upon you because you've got it all and I've got nothing next to you. That's what humility is all about. It's about realizing our smallness next to Krishna, not next to the guy sitting next to you. That's meaningless. That's here today, gone tomorrow. But next to Krishna, it's eternal. I'll always be smaller. I'll always be tiny. I'll always be insignificant. And yet the interesting thing about it, Krishna, in his largesse, in his great compassion, will not let me feel small. He will build me up. Look at on the Battle of Kurukshetra. He made Arjuna a big, great warrior. And so many great Pandavas were made great, who were not so great, but they became great because Krishna gave them his grace. And why did he give them his grace? He gave them his grace because they were devotees. They loved him. They served him. They honored him. They glorified him. They did everything to tell him, in effect, that without you, we are nothing. And he got the message. And he said, I'm going to make you something. They're going to think you're me. And I'm going to let you do things that you normally could never do. That's what it means to be a Shakyavesha avatar. An avatar, as we know, is someone who comes down from spiritual world. But Shakta means empowered devotee. Krishna gives, for example, if I have some water and I pour it into your hand, then you're empowered with water. So he gives different powers to different devotees. And those powers are used by the devotees to do the functions or the activities or the needs that Krishna wants done. Look at Hanuman. Hanuman had, he had all these powers. But do we know, everybody know the story of his powers? It's so interesting. Hanuman, when he was a little, boy, he was very mischievous, okay? And he had a few little powers. And one of the things, he flew up into the sky, and he thought the sun was an orange. He could eat it. It was funny. So he kept going higher, and I think Indra knocked him down. Knocked him right down back to the ground. You don't belong up here. You belong down there. So stay there. So Vayu, the father of Hanuman, he got upset. He said, Indra, how dare you throw my son down onto the ground? You have no right to do that. For that, because I'm in charge of the air, I'm going to stop the air currents and no one's going to be able to breathe. How do you like that? He did that. Everybody was going, So all the demigods got together and said, we have to pacify him. We got to, otherwise, we're going to be in bad shape. We're all going to die due to asphyxiation. So that's what they did. But they did more. I don't know how I remembered this story because I couldn't remember it yesterday. But anyway, what happened was that they knew that the son of Vayu, namely Hanuman, is very dear to the father. So the way you can best pacify a father is by doing something nice or warm or kindly to the son. So that's what they did. They gave him mystic powers. So little Hanuman, with all these mystic powers, he started doing all kinds of atrocious things to the holy men. It was fun, you know, like practical jokes. You know, kids do that. So what happened is that the holy men, they got together. No, they were hanging up their kutras, their underwear, hanging up this on lines. And Hanuman was just taking it, throw it into the mud. Those kind of things. So they said, what are we going to do about this kid? I mean, we can't stop him. And if we hurt him, his father will get after us again. Terrible problem. So I got it. So what they did is they cursed Hanuman to forget that he had the powers. Yeah, he forgot that he had all, so he didn't use them because he forgot that he had them. So when we come into the Ramayana, and it's time to try to find Sita, and all of the great devotee monkeys are together, they say, how are we going to get over the ocean? So one said, I can go 800 miles, and the other said 500, I can go 600 miles, but nobody could make the full jump. So Hanuman was keeping quiet because he could make it, but he didn't know he could make it. So then Jambavan said, hey, Hanuman, why are you so quiet? He said, what have I got to say? I have nothing to say. He said, what do you mean you have nothing to say? Now, the irony of the whole thing is that if someone reminded him that he had those powers, he could use them. So that's what Jambavan did. He reminded him that he had those powers. And as soon as Hanuman remembered them, he made himself big like a mountain. And he then flew in this big size across the ocean. And Hanuman did that not to show off powers. He was no longer a little mischievous kid. He was Ram's devotee. Being Ram's devotee, what he wanted to do is serve and satisfy Ram. So, therefore, he used the powers to get across. And when he got across, there was a doorkeeper or a gatekeeper wanted to beat Hanuman up. So what did he do? He made himself tiny like a little mouse. Couldn't find him. He went under the gate. It's hilarious, really. And some of the things that Hanuman did were absolutely stunning, amazing, and awesome. My point is this. There's a good use for powers. And Hanuman, having been, of course, as he grew up, he became cultured and he became restrained. And he understood what was high because he was absorbed and attached to Lord Ramachandra. And Lord Ramachandra is the epitome of all morality. He's known for that. So, of course, Hanuman, being his devotee disciple, would necessarily do that. Get that. And he did. And he's always pictured in the picture of Ram and Sita and Lakshman as on his knees next to all of them, because that's the position that he felt he should always be in. Even if he's standing up, his position is that he is on his knees, bowing to the Lord and begging for the mercy of the Lord. And that's the way we have to be. We have to look at our spiritual master. I am yours. Please guide me, help me, direct me. By myself, I can't do anything. Okay. Srila Prabhupada, please, you've given so much mercy to so many persons. I need a little bit. Please help me. So there's no harm in that. There's nothing wrong with that. Because we're going to a higher power instead of thinking, no, I can do it, and beating on the chest like this, like a gorilla. So this is the main point in this particular verse, that we should depend upon Krishna, but not for every little thing that we can do without the special help of Krishna. If we can, for example, go across the street and just walk over, we should do it. But I don't have to say, excuse me, Prabhu, could you please just take me under the arm and get me across the street, when I can do it myself. Take help when we need it. And when we don't need it, do the best we can, depending upon Krishna, depending upon his love, and depending upon our desire to please him. So that is the goal. The goal of life is to please Krishna, to satisfy Krishna, to use everything that we have given by Krishna for the sake or for the opportunity to serve the desire of the Supreme Lord. When that is done, we will feel happy, because Krishna, who's in the heart, he will bless us with what? With bliss, with love, with peace, with joy. These are Krishna's qualities. As they surrender unto me, I reward them accordingly. And what is he rewarding us with? His knowledge, his peace, his love. All of these things are being rewarded. And the devotee should always feel he doesn't deserve it, because he's committed so many offenses and so many wrongs and so many sins. Who am I to get this? But the Lord says, don't worry about it. Leave it all to me. And if you don't want to accept it, but think of it as not yours, as belonging to me. And if you think of it as belonging to me, you'll be free of the attachment. And once you're free of the attachment, then you can be the biggest, the greatest, the highest, the most powerful person in the world and not feel that you're a big shot. You always feel like a little shot, because next to Krishna, we're all little shots. Hare Krishna. Thank you. Are there any questions or comments that anyone would like to add to what I have tried to say? Nobody has any comments? No criticisms? Not today? Come on, give me a little something. Tear me down a little bit. Oh, I've got to get puffed up. No, not get puffed up. I already am. It's just more so. Okay, that's it. Thank you so much. All glories to Srila Prabhupada. Ki.